This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things gumshoe. As you notice, it's just me and Becca tonight. Jam is on injured reserve and will be with us next stream. So tonight, we're going to talk more Knight's Black Agent, specifically the resource guide and Double Tap. Resource guide comes with the director's screen. It's about 58 pages, gives you some useful information, written by Gareth Ryder Hanrahan. And it's broken down into different sections. We're going to cover those tonight, both Becca and I. And hopefully we will enlighten you on some new things for Knight's Black Agents, if you're interested in it, which I think you should be. It's a very fun game if you're into the kind of the spy genre. Mm-hmm. Becca, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing all right. Healthy, upright, breathing, you know, it's the little things.
Yes. Little things. Yes. Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. So I said, it's about 58 pages of the resource guide and, covers some initiations, kind of how you got introduced to vampires. There's some new monsters, operations, some new combat stuff, some more thrilling scenes, some mission skeletons to help you flesh out your adventure, and some new locations. That's what we're going to cover in the resource guide. So with initiations, what they're talking about is, how did your agent come to know that vampires really do exist? We've all heard the stories, but do they really exist? And there's eight ways that could happen.
Mm-hmm. They all are traumatic, obviously. If you're going to run into vampires, it's not going to be a relaxing, carefree experience. It's going to be one of trauma, usually. I mean, you could be betrayed, you could be collateral damage, you have a head-on collision with them, anything's possible.
Yes, and it's, again, the initiation is how they got to know that vampires are real, and how they got into that capital C conspiracy and got pulled into the world of vampires. Mm-hmm. Like Becca said, there's afflicted. You were attacked directly by vampires. You were betrayed by someone close to you. Criminal traces, you're doing something else and you find a trail that leads there. The head-on collision, as Becca said, one of your operations runs into it. Yeah, and it just explodes. There's a very interesting one called Impossible Analysis, which, if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, where he talks about when you eliminate everything that's impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, has to be the truth. There's the old files. You're the analyst that's relegated to the basement because you want to find your red stapler. You come across these old files, you know, maybe work for the CIA or one of those other kind of agencies, and you come across old files that lead to the vampires. There's the trade, where you meet an agent who's really needs a lot of help, so they're willing to give you any information they have, and they tip you off that, hey, here's some info on vampires, and you're like, oh, what's this? Even if you really weren't looking for that. So those are some of the ways that you can help your characters when you're determining, do you know about vampires? Maybe we talked about that, I think, last stream. Do you know already, or are you going to start as just police officer Mark walking his beat and he discovers in a course of play vampires? And if you do know they're vampires, well, how do you know that? And these are some suggestions on for your agents to know, hey, this is why I know there's vampires. And with that, if you take these, they give suggestions on pluses and minuses, things you would know, vampirology, gain cover, tradecraft, little bonuses that you'll get, or negatives also, like in the trade, you reduce your network, but you get gain cover plus two, tradecraft plus one as a suggestion. And you can come up with other ideas and work with your director on kind of little bonuses you'd get because of that. Next section is new monsters, and Becca will cover some of the neat, juicy monsters covered in the resource guide.
Yeah, so we're going to be going over both director's screen here, this resource guide, as well as Double Tap, and in both we get new monsters. The ones here in the resource guide are, I'm going to call them more mundane, even though that's not exactly what they are, because they're not vampiric exactly. They're the weird things that you see. The ape man, the doppelganger, the gargoyles, the megabat, the things that are not quite a vampire, but definitely are going to traumatize any human who hasn't really been introduced to the vampire side of the world, but only the spy side. This is going to be the things that when your spy sees them, it's there's no way that this can be true. These things don't exist. So
yeah, I think they're excellent kind of low level monsters that you can throw out more clues. You know, not every game session is going to have a vampire for you to kill, but they're the underlings or beings in that world, that genre of things. James, I hear, but he really liked the doppelganger. I think he liked it because it's an exact copy of someone. So they're good plants. You know, you're talking to your, you know, normal coffee barista and think it's trustworthy. And it turns out it's a doppelganger working for the vampires. That would be great. That's which monster do you like
out of this? I thought the ruby wasp was interesting. It's the writers take a real wasp we have here in the world, and you know, mix it with some vampire blood and grow in size, and it no longer just stings cockroaches but humans. And you know, you get gigantic wasps that can be controlled by vampires and that can, you know, stun you when they sting you, and like take you down, starting with a paralyzing attack and ending with mind altering visions. So, you know, that's always fun when that's something that you're like, oh, I kind of recognize that from real life. Oh, cool. It will kill me.
Yeah. I could definitely see using that, maybe around a lair or somewhere trying to keep you out. Cause I don't think anybody wants to get stung, but if you're sneaking up to the old mansion and you see some bees, you probably won't pay them any mind until they start stinging you and you have visions or you're stunned or you're paralyzed. And it's kind of a good precursor before you even get into what you think is going to be the fight.
Right.
That'd be pretty cool. Right. I kind of like the fetch. Very similar to the doppelganger, as in it's hard to see to detect them. Fetches are created when a vampire kills someone and they trap their ghost in the body. So your consciousness is still there. So you're dead, but you're trapped in your body. The vampire doesn't really control you, but the vampire can snuff you out at any point. So if you still want to have some sort of an existence, you'll probably cooperate. They're very hard to detect. They just kind of look probably like a pale, sickly person. But again, it would be hard to go, hey, across the room there is an undead fetch. I could see as a director using that quite a bit. Some of them pretend to be vampires, but they're not. They don't do that. But yeah, and they have, but, you know, all these have their different abilities and powers and such.
Well, I was going to say, if you follow either the doppelganger or the fetch, you can easily then kind of transfer into the operatives, which is kind of the next section of this book, in that operatives are going to be your NPCs on this book. Gives you some like quickly fleshed out, sometimes combatants. And if you start out thinking that this is just like an ordinary doppelganger, but then it turns out to be the doppelganger of an assassin, like, well, that could be rough. But yeah, some NPCs, just like an assassin or the crooked lawyer, the mob boss, somebody that you have to deal with and that the game master can kind of pull quickly with minimal preparation if they get surprised that, you know, your players decided not to go to the library looking for information, but decided to go clubbing instead. And
yes, and I like that they have you know, like you said, it's fully fleshed out, but each one, you know, then the first one's assassin because, you know, it's alphabetical, but they've got their abilities and all that stuff, but they also give you alternate names, alternate descriptions. You don't want it to be, you know, the 30-year-old expert sniper. Maybe it's an old dude that's just really good. It was an ex-sniper. Mm-hmm. And they have different, you know, tactics and tricks and things you can do with them. And what I like is each one also has quick little pullout of quick Renfield conversion. So it's not just a human sniper, it's your Renfields or your, mm-hmm. your crooked, you know, lawyer, whoever it is. You know, there's a janitor in here, a custodian. So it's not just, like I said, people you fight. It could be other people that you can throw out there that you meet and interact with, and it's quick little security one's good too, because you can use that over and over again. Police officer, security agent, and you just change the name, change the description, and all your stats and kind of how they react are all set there for mm-hmm. you. Kind of helps the director a lot to pull that out. I like that when they include those in there, which, you know, being a Pelgrim product, it's to be expected.
Yes.
Indeed. Which leads us, because you talked about the assassins and your doppelganger turns into an assassin, kind of gets right into combat. And this is combat 201. So it's kind of extra thing for the director to use, because, you know, we've got mooks, got bad guys, we've got agents, you know, as you work mm-hmm. your way up. Mooks are very good to have, you know, nothing like James Bond being chased by the motorcycle gang, and they're all mooks, so it's easy to dispatch them, knock them off their bikes, subdue them somehow, and deal with it without taking a whole lot of damage yourself. Mm-hmm. What I like about this, when you go through this product on the mooks, kind of gives you some guidelines of, you know, generally their pools aren't that high, one shot from a weapon or two or three hits melee, either fists, martial arts, or an actual melee weapon should take them out. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a nice little chart on weapons ranges. If you're not really too familiar with weapons, you're like, well, just how far can a pistol shoot compared to a rifle, or how far can my hand-to-hand or thrown weapon? Kind of gives you a nice guide to, yes, maybe out of range completely. Quick little thing for the director to use. And what's really good in here is the mook attacks. Because if you got 10 mooks going against the agents, it can kind of get down pretty boring if you're like, okay, mook one shoots, mook two shoots, mook three shoots. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing every time. So they kind of give you some ideas on how to use them and some guide on how to use their spends. They have small pools. Mm. They give you some kind of guidelines of, you know, do you spend half the pool on the attacks till they run out? Do you do a flat spend based on their ability ratings? Like a zero would be zero. 1 to 3 would give you a 1 point spend for every time they shoot. 4 to 6 would be 2. Or the escalating spend, which I like just because it kind of, to me, it threw me right back to the escalation die, where round one, you put 1 point. Round two is 2 points. So it ramps mm-hmm. up. The longer you're in fight with these mooks, the more dangerous it is, which mm-hmm. it shouldn't be too bad, because you should be taking out mooks every round, hopefully,
yeah.
you know, unless you just fumble every round, which so that's one yeah. way. And it helps with the bookkeeping aspect of a director. When you've got, okay, I've got 10 mooks and maybe they're led by a bad guy and you've got a lot of things to track. You just write down, you know what, I'm just going to go 1 point spend. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3 as each round goes. You could also do an attack pattern, which, mm-hmm. and I give an example of a 5 point pattern. They got 5 points. It would be 0 the first round, 1 point the second round, 1 point the third round, and then 3 points. So it's kind of like they're nervously size you up and then go for, because they're spending 3 or 4 points, they're probably going to hit you. Or the 4-0, 1-0, where they're hitting you and then kind of waiting to see if you run away. So there's different examples of how you can kind of lay that out. You just take a note. Hey, we're going to go 4-0, 1-0, or however you want to lay it out for your guys to do. Mooks generally, like I said, shouldn't have more than 4 health. A gunshot or a couple of melee attacks should take them out. And you mm-hmm. get into, do they run away? Don't run away. Bad guys, next level up, a little bit harder. And there's some thriller combat for them, because they should be not a mook. Mooks pull out their pistol or their shotgun or their SMG, and they lay down some fire on you, and you can kind of mix up how well they do that. The bad guys And they have some examples here of some combos they can use to make them stand out. Like, oh, that's not a mook because he just jumped in, did a combo move, and is hitting me a little bit different than the guy hiding behind that crate over there taking shots with mm-hmm. his pistol. And again, mm-hmm. they've got a whole list of some thriller combat moves, some auto fire, called shots, disarm. Nothing like, because you don't want to, and again, they give advice on that, like, don't make it unfun for your group.
Right.
Don't have that sniper from a mile away take him out, or the hidden nuclear bomb that blows them up. They're like, oh, well, sorry, you're all dead.
Right.
Have them discover the nuclear bomb and a chance to disarm it.
That's
great for that person that has, you know, your one fighter that always likes this one weapon and they're really good with it. What do you do to the disarming shot to take that away from them and make them think of, okay, well, now what do I do? And that makes it more challenging without killing the character.
Once again, for those of you guys who are tuning in for the first time and haven't heard of our previous episodes about Knights Black Agents, you are a spy. Not only are you a spy, you're like a super action spy. You are the best of the best, which is why you got recruited here. So yeah, you in spy movies, you're always going to find the nuclear bomb before the time goes off. You'll have a chance to disarm it, but it is kind of important for the game master to switch things up and say, okay, I need you to think of something else because it's not going to work. They've disarmed you twice now. What are you going to do? And it's when they go, okay, well, instead I'm going to grab this mook and use them as a shield and throw them at. Okay, great.
The old meat shield.
Yeah, the good old human meat shield.
That's right. That's right. Just remember, not only does grab the old lady and put her in harm's way. That's a no-no.
Right. Grab him. Your source of stability is gonna rock there.
Yeah. And it kind of ties in if you get into the cinematic, you know, you're thinking of James Bond, Jason Bourne, all that. How many times have you seen James Bond pull his PPK out and a guy kicks it out of his hand and it turns into hand-to-hand tussle, running around, throwing him off, you know, through windows and all that because the gun's gone. That's a great cinematic fight and it's intense and you're using, okay. And then maybe next time, like, well, let me put some points in hand-to-hand or melee or let me take some martial arts kind of thing. Or improvise, like you said, jump through the window, throw them through the window, grab a chair, other things. It makes everything more exciting than just Mook comes at you and I shoot him. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's another kind of a suggestion they give. It's no fun. It should be thrilling and it should be challenging, but it's no fun if I have 10 mooks and a bad guy and my 10 mooks all shoot your one combat guy and take him out. Mm-hmm. Even though it's tactically sound that I should do that, that's probably not what's going to happen. Some will shoot him, some will hide, some will shoot our hacker with her backpack computer who's trying to get away. That is a threat because she probably doesn't even have a gun, or if she does, it's one of those little self-protection type derringer. But maybe that's where you say, hey, you know what? My bad guy is going to call shot and hit her in the leg so she can't get away so I can get her backpack. You do something like that. And there's other some examples, all-out attack, blaze of competence, dodge and weave, and it gives you like all-out attack. Reckless attack, called shot to torso, extra attacks. It would cost the bad guy one athletics, three hand-to-hand, and two health. So you spend other points to get this, and boom, the bruiser comes in, jumps in, starts pounding on you. So it kind of mixes it up than just, like I said, bad guys show up, take the standard pot shots at you. Makes it a little bit more cinematic, more enjoyable, I think, for everyone if it kind of has more to it. These are great examples, so you don't have to think of it on your own, which is really good. Which leads us, because we're talking about cinematic and thrilling things, leads us right into thrilling scenes.
So this is a build on the thriller chases from the Knights Black Agents core book. And yeah, there's some things that show up in almost every single spy movie. You can almost stake your life on it. Like, there's going to be a tense handoff. There's going to be an interrogation. There's going to be car chases and shootings. There's going to be breaking into a secure facility. And the thriller scenes give you, the game master and the player, ways to make it more cinematic and more exciting than just, oh, let me roll the dice and see if I've got it. Or, I mean, in Gumshoe, there isn't that much dice rolling, but that idea of, well, I don't know what to do, so let me just tick off the number on my box. So it talks about dueling, whenever you get somebody to start dueling, and how to not only make it thrilling, but also how to either help your hero or help your villain, depending on who would have the upper hand or the lead. Thrilling hacking, heists, chases, interrogations, all those things that you've seen in the movies that you want to make a cinematic moment. There's really great rules in here of how to do that. And also then examples of what could possibly happen while it's going on. Yeah. Did you have a, you're going to be playing a military man.
Yeah. He's a police officer, but it's like the GSG-9 is kind of like SWAT. They do extra stuff. It's not just like a street cop thing.
Mm-hmm. So, which thriller scene would your cop thrive in?
I liked I gotta go back to it. The thriller sneaking.
Yeah.
He's trained sniper, so it's not bull rush in there and fisticuffs. It's sneak around, infiltrate somewhere, find his sniper hide, that kind of stuff. Conduct surveillance. And I like the thriller sneaking. I like the picture of the guy in the hallway, wedged on the ceiling, and he's holding himself up against the ceiling, wedged against the wall, so the guy walking by can't see him. So there's the cramped open infiltration, cramped infiltration, the thriller contest results. It's nice to have that extra things for sneaking instead of just like, okay, I infiltrate in because you know I've got 12 in it and I've got lots of points and can sneak along and you can't detect me, but it gives you some other things. And it uses what I like too is the investigative ability, like architecture and electronic surveillance, to give me bonuses to get in, architecture. That's one of the old standard Russian bunkers with the original venting. It's a supportive person's weight. So I can go in that way. So using architecture to help your infiltrate sneak is kind of neat. All the different things that give you ideas on how you can use other skills to help your infiltrate instead of just saying, yeah, infiltrate because I'm really good at it. Which one do you like?
Yes, I plan to play a hacker, thriller hacking would be fun. The thriller negotiation is an interesting one because it's not something that you usually think of when you think of like thrilling, like, oh, we're negotiating. But I mean, if you place it in an relatively empty train yard and you have to cross the rails and trust that the other person is going to be bringing the goods in exchange for whatever you have, you know there's somebody up on a building nearby ready to snipe at you and you've got to do this exchange. I think that could be a really fun, tense, and thrilling moment for anyone in the group, because negotiations aren't going to be about whether or not your character can run, jump, or climb, but about how well they can manipulate the situation.
Yes. Yeah. They give you definitely other ways instead of, you wouldn't think negotiation. Well, that's just talking. There's a lot of other things that can come into play that allow, I think I like this because it allows everyone to participate.
Yeah.
So, even like your hacker, we other agents might have something to help boost that. Like, hey, wait a minute. I know this esoteric piece of information that might help you make it easier to do your hacking or whatever computer whiz thing your character's going to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So all these are all little snippets of your adventure. And the next section I think is really helpful for new directors or even old directors, just coming up with what's the mission. And they use mission skeleton. You figure skeleton is kind of the structure that your whole body is supports it. And that would be the whole campaign that you're doing. And there are, 9 mission types that kind of break it down. And there might be more if you think of it, but there are 9 basic missions that your agents are going to do. And that's destroy the conspiracy cell or some asset, flipping an agent or an asset, heist, you need to steal something, Hit, need to kill someone. Hunt, need to go find someone. Rescue, rescue the person that got kidnapped. Your hacker, probably. Sneak, trace, and uncover.
Yep, that was nine.
Okay. So, with those, it those are the nine mission types. And for each of those, it gives you ways when you're plotting what the mission is going to be, okay? Like plotting a destroy mission, okay? You're going to have the investigation that the agents are going to do, complications that arise, and these are all just suggestions to help you. Okay, they're going to do a destroy mission. Okay, here's the mission. Here's some suggestions on how they can gather the intelligence for it in their investigation, be it hacking, human intel where they're watching something. Complications arising from that. Maybe the hacker goes in and trips some cybersecurity to alert them. Hey, hey, somebody's trying to hack into our system. Sets them on edge. Twists. Maybe the person who was supposed to open the back door to let you in for actual physical gathering betrays you and the cops show up. And then some starting points to get you going on that mission. And they do that for each one of those nine basic missions that I covered at the beginning, the investigation, complication, twist, and a starting point. So there's a plethora of stuff right in here. Even if you don't have it already mapped out in your mind, a la JM, he's probably, if we said, hey, let's play Knights Black Agents, he's probably already got a whole conspiracy pyramid and a campaign set in his mind already that could
go.
But if you don't, or say you just want to throw something different, throw him a different mission off the main campaign to mix it up some. Again, this helps you kind of put that all together very easily. Because that's the things you're going to do. You investigate. There's going to be complications. And if you're trying to think, well, how can I complicate this if you want to? Or what twists? And a starting point to get it going. And along with that, say, okay, now I've got a destroy mission. I've got the investigation and my complications. And I got all that. Where am I going to put this adventure?
Well, luckily, Mark, there are nine new locations in this resource guide. Oh man, that was smooth. once again, if you go back to the core book, Knights Black Agents provide a whole bunch of cities for you to use and play from. And if you don't want the FBI to pick up that you are researching the layout of various airports in well-known destinations, you could instead take the more helpful clues and generic information here in this resource guide, like the airport. They give you clues with various skills and how you would find that out, what's going to happen with a fight or a chase. And then it goes through, nine different locations. We've got an airport, we've got a biohazard lab, we've got a bunker, a Gothic cathedral, which the rest of these, I feel like, spies. Yeah, every spy, you're going to end up in an airport or you're going to end up at a biohazard lab because there's something you've got to destroy there. But the Gothic cathedral goes, wait, remember, you're playing with vampires.
And cults and,
Which then, of course, leads me to think about that really cool discovery back in March about the lead coffin underneath Notre Dame. But anyway, we're not going to talk about those vampires.
Don't open it.
They did. There's a passenger jet as a location, the safe house, which we all know JM safe houses are not actually safe. The street market, the super yacht, and the villa.
You know, the bad guy's got to have a super yacht.
Oh, I want a super yacht. I don't know about you. I want the super yacht. Oh, wait, right. I'm a good guy. So just like helps to give you an idea of what could happen. Especially again, if your players take a left turn somewhere and you weren't super prepared for the super yacht, but now they're on and you haven't done any research on how big it is. this resource guide can definitely help with that. And, you know, it also just lets you know, like, how fast it goes, how well it can maneuver. And, you know, when you have the mini sub underneath the super yacht, oh, don't worry, we have stats for that, too.
And if you want to jump in and swim,
there's
stats on sharks.
Which I just, yeah, cracks me up. It reminds me of Despicable Me, the bad yes. guy in that has a shark in his yes. house. And, of course, and
would, he's a villain. You know, I was saying, I wouldn't even say it's a left turn. It's, and if you've run games before, any genre, mm-hmm. and you're trying to describe something, and you mention, you know, a chair, and they spend the next 3 hours focused on the chair. Or in this case, you just happen to mention they're on the coast in Greece, and mm-hmm. maybe they were going to the villa, and they spot, you know, as you do, yeah, and there's some boats on there, and there's a super yacht. Really? And now they're focused on the super yacht because you said it. If you do
therefore,
that, flip open to this, get your super yacht, and you can run with it. It's got the lower decks, the mid decks, any of these things. Walking in mm-hmm. Old Budapest, you mentioned, oh, yeah, you get this, and there's a market, and this, and there's a church, kind of Gothic. Oh, boom, and they go into it. Okay, I have nothing planned for that. You're not really supposed to go into it, but they will go if you mention it. So not that you shouldn't use description for your locales, but be prepared for them to go into the one place you weren't expecting to go. This is a great help for that. Like you said, it gives you the, you know, the clues and rules, things, how to use it in a fight or a chase, extras that might just be there. Like sometimes you think, okay, there's going to be a custodian, but who else would be on the super yacht? Well, okay, there's going to be a captain, mm-hmm. there's going to be a purser, and different servants, different people doing things. And it just kind of helps you when you're in that bind of like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? Boom, there it is. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice spread of things to have. And like just the market alone is really great because they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Super yachts, absolutely. Not so much, but street market, sure. They're in every town and city. So it's great to have that passenger debt. If you're on the jet and there's a vampire, you're hurting. Because if you're flying, there's nowhere to get off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that about, I believe, wraps up on page 56. So it's short and sweet, but it's packed with a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
For the resource guide that you get with the director's screen.
Yes.
So if you don't have it and you plan on running it, I would recommend it. Director screens or any kind of screens are helpful for all the different tables, but this has a nice little 58-page PDF or tome, not quite a tome, but mm-hmm. a small mm-hmm. handout that you've got that you can thumb through and have lots of great information.
Mm-hmm. Did we want to mention the resource guide and screen? If you get just the PDF, it's about $15. If you get the PDF and physical copy, it's about $30.
Yes.
And yes. I would say, yeah. It's just such a nice resource.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would recommend it. You know, we always have our thoughts on yay or nay. I say yay. It's worth mm-hmm. the money. Even if you don't want the physical copies, one, you run out of room for them, but get the PDFs. Easy to pull up. You can print a couple of the charts you need or that section. But it's really easy to search through. Go to the section you need. It's definitely worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
You've been listening to the Iconic Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and more information about the show. Thanks for listening.